All right, I'm Eliza Blair. I'm reading from Vineland by Thomas Pynchon, page 132 near the bottom, where DL has just been offered a job by Ralph Wavone and decides to run away. She had to switch cars again before she got to L.A., then took the bus out to a bank branch on Mid-Wilshire where she had once providentially stashed a packet of documents that would now give her a choice among identities. Paid cash on Western Avenue for a 66 Plymouth Fury, bought a wig at a place across the street, went into a certain ladies' gas station toilet on Olympic, legendary in the dopers community, and emerged a different, less noticeable person. The car radio, tuned to KFWB, was playing The Doors' People Are Strange When You're a Stranger, as she injected herself into the slow lane of the eastbound freeway and settled in, hating to let any of it go, banning the dinosaurs, the Palm Springs turnoff, Indio, across the Mojave, to be redreamed in colors pale but intense, with unnaturally fine sand blowing in plumes across the sun, baby blue shadows in the folds of the dunes, a pinkish sky, holding on, letting go, redreaming each night stop the less easterly places she'd been in all day, coming slowly unstuck, leaving for the United States, trying not to get emotional, but still hanging on to the rearview mirror's single tale of recedings and vanishing points as we hang on looks our lovers give. On inertial navigation, knowing she'd know what she was looking for when she found it, DL didn't stop till the outskirts of Columbus, Ohio, which she first beheld around midday in a stunning onslaught of smog and traffic. By this time she was used to the car and its unorthodox push-button shifting, having made the analysis stick shift equals penis, and speculating that a push-button automatic might at least appear more clitorally ladylike, or, as DL might have put it, regressive, if there'd been anybody any more to talk to, which of course there wasn't. She took a little apartment and found a job at a vacuum cleaner parts distributor's, typing and filing. Columbus must have promised a life that some residual self, somewhere in the stifling dark, had wanted always. Superman could change back into Clark Kent, she had once confided to Frenesi. Don't underestimate it. Working at the Daily Planet was the Man of Steel's Hawaiian vacation, his Saturday night in town, his marijuana and his opium smoke, and oh, what I wouldn't give. An evening newspaper, any place back in the Midwest. She would leave work around press time, make a beeline for some walk-down lounge, near enough to the paper that she could feel vibrations from the presses through the wood of the bar. Drink rye, wipe her glasses on her tie, leave her hat on indoors, gossip in the dim light with the other regulars. In the winter it would already be dark outside the windows. The polished shoes would pick up highlights as the street lamps got brighter. She wouldn't be waiting for anybody or for anything to happen, because she'd only be Clark Kent. Lois Lane might not give her the time of day anymore, but that'd be okay. She'd be dating somebody from the secretarial pool. They'd go out for dinner sometimes to this cozy Neapolitan joint down by some lakefront, where the mussels posilipo wouldn't be beat. So instead of being able to fly every place, her friend had replied, you'd have to climb into some car you're still making payments on. Drive on out, you, Clark Kent, to the scene of some disaster. Blood, corpses, flies, teen technicians wandering around stoned, eyewitnesses in shock. Superman never has to get involved with any of that. Why should anybody want to be only mortal? Better to stay an angel, angel. DL, more generous in those days, only thought her friend had missed the point. In Columbus, she spent days in shopping centers, ninja steno, assembling an invisibility wardrobe, murky woolens, dim pastels, flat shoes with matching purses, beige hose, white underwear. Surprised how little of a chore it was. The blandness of accessories would call out to her from shop windows. The Mrs. sections of discount stores were acres of abundance waiting to be picked through. She had by now grown into a relationship with the Plymouth, named her Felicia, bought her a new stereo, was washing her at least twice per work week, plus again on weekends, when she also waxed the vehicle. She swam and did Tai Chi and continued to practice the exercises she'd learned in Japan. She grew used to her disguised image in the mirror, the short haircut with a rodent brown rinse, the freckles subdued under foundation, the eye makeup she'd never have worn before, slowly becoming her alias, a small-town spinster pursuing a perfectly diminished life, a minor belle gone to weeds and gophers before her time. So that when they came and kidnapped her in the Pizza Hut parking lot and took her back to Japan, she wasn't sure right away that being sold into white slavery would turn out to be at all beneficial as a career step. They took her with a matter-of-factness that made her feel like an amateur. Her little car was left alone in its space, sometimes across miles and years, to call out to her in a puzzled voice, asking why she hadn't come back. She fought, but whoever it was had sent experts that specialized in not damaging young women. The story she heard eventually was that a certain client would pay a fee in the hefty-to-whopping range for an American blonde with advanced ass-kicking skills.